Boleh kamu ikut dan was the practice of vipassana. So when he was listening to the talk of the talk of the Buddha, he was going through the practice of vipassana. He was going through the different stages of vipassana, and the wholesome karma involved in the practice of vipassana must be responsible for his rebirth as a celestial being. So Mahavishara said, vipassana practice can lead to rebirth in the celestial realm. Even if you have not done any other meritorious deed, if you practice vipassana meditation and if you do not get enlightenment, still it can lead you to rebirth in celestial realm. In one discourse, Buddha said, a universal monarch may be powerful, he may enjoy pleasures of human beings as well as pleasures of the celestial beings, but since he does not possess four things, he is not free from hell, from animal realm, from the domain of cold, and not free from the plane of misery. But although the person, a noble disciple, maintains himself by lumps of alms food and wears ragged robes, that means he is not rich, still as he possesses the four things, he is free from hell and so on. And these four things are unshakable faith in the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, and pure sila. And in the end, Buddha says, the obtaining of sovereignty over the four continents is not worth a 16th part of the obtaining of the four things. That means being a universal monarch is not worth a 16th part of being a sotapanna. You may be a universal monarch, you may be the Secretary General of the United Nations, but you are not free from rebirth in hell and so on. But if you are a sotapanna, even though you are not rich, you are free from rebirth in hell and so on. And so being a king of the whole of universe is not worth the 16th part of being a sotapanna, and that is what Buddha taught in one discourse. Another blessing is that Sotapatti Magga abandons the eightfold wrong path. Now you are familiar with the eightfold path, eightfold right path, but corresponding to that, there is the eightfold wrong path. That eightfold wrong path consists of eight wrong factors, beginning with wrong understanding and so on. So right understanding, which belongs to the right eightfold path, right understanding abandons the wrong understanding or wrong view, and right thought abandons the wrong thought and so on. One thing in this statement is mitcha sati, wrong sati. Now strictly according to Abhidhamma, there is no wrong sati. Sati is always beautiful. Sati is always hope, my God. Let me say beautiful, right? And sati is wholesome. There can be no unwholesome sati, according to Abhidhamma. But here we find the word Miccha Sati, wrong Sati. So the commentary says that there is no such thing as wrong Sati actually. But here the remembering of something in the past with Akusala is what is called wrong Sati. So you remember something of in the past. You remember killing in the past, you remember stealing in the past, and that is called wrong mindfulness. And then you remember to kill, you remember to steal and so on, that is also called wrong sati. So sometimes words are used in different sense. Right sati, that is according to Abhidhamma, but wrong sati, it is to be understood according to Sotanta and not Abhidhamma, because according to Abhidhamma there is no such thing as wrong sati. So sammasati or right sati, right mindfulness, can abandon the wrong mindfulness and so on and so on, so on until right concentration can abandon wrong concentration. Now, you have examples of wrong concentration when you look at people who are, what do you call, catching fish. they take the, what do you call this? Catching, fishing rod. Fishing rod, and then their samadhi is there. Right? So the moment they see some pressure, then they will, what do you call, pick up the rod, take the rod up. So that kind of samadhi is called Miccha Samadhi. It is a wrong samadhi. So the right samadhi can eradicate wrong samadhi. So the Sotapatti Magga, which is actually the eight right factors, abandon the eight wrong factors, or eight factors of the wrong path. So this is one blessing of Sotapatti Magga. And the next blessing is that Sotapatti Magga destroys all enmity and danger. Here enmity means killing living beings, stealing and so on. They are called enmity because they are like enemies. They will send us to the full woeful state, and so they are like enemies, so they are called enmity. And the Sotapatti Magga destroys all these. That means a person who has become a Sotapanna will never do these things, killing living beings and so on. And also Sotapatti Magga destroys all danger. That means all danger of falling into full woeful state and so on. And the next is that it leads to the state of the fully enlightened one's breast-born son and daughter. Actually, there was no daughter in the books. I put it in because I'm afraid. So, the Sotapatti Magga leads to the state of the fully enlightened one, that means the Buddha's firstborn son and daughter. Only when one becomes a Sotapanna can one say that I have become a true son or daughter of a Buddha. Until one becomes a Sotapanna, one is still capable of deciding Buddha. One is still capable of going to another teacher and so on, because his or her faith or confidence in the Triple Gem and the practice is not strong. So only those who will never deviate from being the disciples of the Buddha should be called Buddha's true sons and daughters. So, Sotapatti Magga makes those who have attained Sotapatti Magga the true sons or daughters of the Buddha. And so in Pali they are called blessed-born sons. So nowadays, we often say we are the sons and daughters of the Buddha. So unless we have reached at least the first stage, we are not really the true sons or daughters of the Buddha. But I think it is right to say, correct to say, we are the sons and daughters of the Buddha to show our confidence and devotion to the Buddha and the Dhamma and the Sangha. So only a person who has become enlightened, who has reached at least the first stage of enlightenment, can say that he or she is a true son or daughter of the Buddha. And then the last is, it provides many hundred blessings. There are many other blessings that are provided by Sotapatti Magga. So just one thing is, when one becomes a Sotapanna, one doesn't have to look at the face of other people, or other teachers. Now, the word Putujana is explained as people who looks up to other people's faces. That means they have no right understanding of their own, and so they look to other people for the right understanding. But once a person becomes a Sotapanna, he or she has seen the truth or realized the Dhamma himself or herself, and so the other day I got an encyclopedia. And so in the encyclopedia there was one section on usage of English. And among the topics of usage of English, there is one section called avoiding sexist language. I read that and I didn't like it. Because I always have to use he or her, him or her, right? He or she and so on. So this language looks awkward. So it gives us many blessings, and so one is that the those who have gained enlightenment don't have to look up to the face of other persons, because they have their own understanding, their own realization of the Dhamma. And also there are many other blessings, like being reborn in well-to-do families only, being reborn in celestial realms, and so on, and so having less suffering in the world. Because if they do not reach higher stages, then they will suffer in this samsara only for 7 more lives. But that means if they remain as Sotapannas and they do not reach the higher stages. If they reach the higher stages, they are no longer Sotapannas. They will be Sakadagamis and so on, and so it is different. But let us say it doesn't remain Sotapanna and does not reach the higher stage. Even if he does not Even if he or she does not reach the higher stage, again, the article said, use they. So they enjoy many benefits of Sotapatti Magga, and they suffer less in the world, and many more blessings to come. There are three kinds of Sotapannas. I think you have heard about them. Those who have seven lives at the most before they say Nibbana, and those who have only one life, one more life, and those who have 2 to 6 more lives. So I'll explain them tomorrow. We have not finished with Sotapanna yet. So a Sotapanna is a person who has reached enlightenment for the first time. And a Sotapanna eradicates wrong view, doubt, and adherence to rites and rituals, and he has only 7 more rebirths in this round of samsara. That means if he does not reach any higher stages in between. In the text, there are 3 types of Sotapanna mentioned, both in the discourses and in Abhidhamma. And the first type of Sotapanna is 7 times maximum Sotapanna. And the second type is family to family Sotapanna. And the third is one seed Sotapanna. This is literal translation of the words. So the first type of Sotapanna is called 7 times maximum. That means he will be reborn 7 times at most, and he will gain final deliverance. So this kind of Sotapanna will, say, become a Sotapanna in this life, and then he will be reborn in human world or in the world of celestial beings for 7 more times. And he will not reach any higher stages of enlightenment until he is reborn for the last rebirth for the 7th time. So in his last rebirth, he will reach the other 3 stages of enlightenment one by one, or he will become an arahant in that life and attain final liberation there. So that type of Sotapanna is called 7 times maximum Sotapanna. The second type of Sotapanna is called family to family Sotapanna. This type of Sotapanna, according to the text, will be reborn 2 or 3 times. And then he will attain final liberation. So for that type of Sotapanna, there are not 7 rebirths but only two or three more rebirths. But the commentaries say that two or three is just a statement. Actually, we must understand not two or three, but up to six. Because the third one is the one who has only one more rebirth. So the first one has seven rebirths, and the third one has one rebirth. So the second one must have the remaining rebirths, that is, two to six. So this type of Sotapanna will be reborn in the human world or in the world of devas for two times, three times, four, five, six times. And in the sixth rebirth, he will surely reach the other higher stages of enlightenment and make an end of suffering there. Sotapannas are reborn in good families only, and so the second one is the type of Sotapanna who goes from one family to another. So here family means human family as well as the family of celestial beings. And the third type of Sotapanna is called one seed Sotapanna. One seed means one seed of rebirth. So the Sotapanna who has only one more rebirth is called a one seed Sotapanna. So such a Sotapanna will be reborn in the human world, according to the text, or in the human world and the world of celestial beings, according to the commentaries. So he will be reborn in the human world or the world of celestial beings for only one, and in that life he will reach the three higher stages of enlightenment and make an end of suffering there. That means he will become an arahant there and attain final liberation. So now we have three types of Sotapannas: those who have seven more rebirths, those who have two to six more rebirths, and those who have only one more rebirth. So when we talk about Sotapannas and we say a Sotapanna will be reborn only seven times more, means seven times in maximum. Not every Sotapanna will be born seven times. So some will be reborn in, according to this division, two times, three times, and so on. Why are there three types of Sotapannas? The commentaries explain that according to the strength of vipassana, the practice, there are three types of Sotapannas. Now, the vipassana of some Sotapannas are weak, not strong. So those whose vipassana is weak will have seven more rebirths. And those whose vipassana is medium will have two to six more rebirths, and those whose vipassana is strong will have only one more rebirth. So depending on the strength of vipassana they practice, there are these three kinds of, or three types of Sotapannas. But there are Sotapannas who do not fit in these three types. The commentaries said that the Dibanga Anatta Pindika and the female devotee Visakha and Sakka, the king of gods, and some others. So these, they are all sotapannas. And they will be reborn in six celestial realms, and also they will be reborn in the pure abodes. So they will go through these realms one by one, and they will attain final liberation in the highest of the pure abodes. So these sotapannas do not fit in these three types. And it is said that these sotapannas, Anatta Pindika and others, take delight in the round of suffering. They don't want to get out of samsara quickly. They want to be in the samsara as long as possible. So they are called those who take delight in a round of suffering. And so they will not attain nibbana after seven rebirths, or they will not attain nibbana very soon. So again, they will go through the six celestial realms, and then five pure abodes one by one. So pure abodes are those realms where lifespan is very, very long, in millions of world cycles. So Anatta Pindika and others, they will stay in this samsara for a long time. So if we can achieve arahantship in this life, then we will go to nirvana ahead of them. They will be left behind in the samsara for a long, long time. So when a person becomes a sotapanna, that means the sotapatti magga consciousness and sotapatti phala consciousness arise in him, in his mind. And after that arising of sotapatti magga and sotapatti phala, he becomes a sotapanna. So magga consciousness arises only once. It's very, very short period of time, maybe a billionth of a second. And then sotapatti magga consciousness is immediately followed by two or three movements of phala or fruition consciousness. When we are talking about billions of thought movements in a second, two or three moments are nothing. So it is like a flash of lightning that the enlightenment moment lasts. So after that, their mind lapses into ordinary consciousness. But those who have reached the path and fruition can get into the fruition consciousness again. Now when mind takes the object and nirvana as object, mind is very peaceful. So those who have attained enlightenment always want to get that peacefulness of mind through taking nirvana as object. So as I said before, it is like vacation for them. And so they can get into the fruition, attainment of fruition consciousness after the attainment of the enlightenment. And those who have attained, who have attained the first stage or other stages as well, always go into or enter into this attainment of fruition quite often. In order to enter into the attainment of fruition, the Sotapanna must practice vipassana. But this time, his aim is not to reach the higher stage of enlightenment, but to reach the stage that he has already reached. So with that in mind, with that aim in mind, he practices vipassana meditation again. And then he went through the different stages of vipassana as he did before attainment of Sotapattimagga. And when the vipassana becomes mature, then instead of past consciousness, now fruition consciousness arises. And this fruition consciousness arises for billions and billions of times. That means as long as he wants them to arise. So this is what is called palasamapatti, or attainment of fruition. So during the attainment of fruition, only the fruition consciousness arises. So one fruition consciousness is followed by another fruition consciousness, and so on. And so this will go on for as long as he wants, maybe 1 hour, 2 hours, or the whole day. So as long as he wishes. So after becoming a Sotapanna, what must he do? Stop meditating or continue practicing meditation? Now in the Silavanta Sutta and also Sudavanta Sutta, Venerable Gotika asks about that, and Venerable Sariputta gives answers. So there it is said, but friend Sariputta, what are the things that a bhikkhu who is a stream enterer should carefully attend to? So what are the things that a Sotapanna should reflect upon? And the Venerable Sariputta said, friend Gotika, a bhikkhu who is a stream enterer should carefully attend to these five aggregates subject to clinging as impermanence, as suffering, and so on, until as oneself. When, friend, a bhikkhu who is a stream enterer carefully attends thus to these five aggregates subject to clinging, it is possible that he may realize the fruit of one's returning. So the Venerable Sariputta said, a Sotapanna should be mindful of the same aggregates of clinging that are the object of the meditation before he reached the stage of Sotapanna. So if Uttodhana practices vipassana on the five aggregates of clinging, and he reaches Sotapanna, a stage of Sotapanna. The Sotapanna also practices on the same five aggregates of clinging, and there's a possibility that he may reach the second stage of enlightenment. So if a person who has reached the first stage wants to reach the second stage, what must he do? He must practice vipassana meditation again. So vipassana meditation is not the practice to be done once in a while and then let it off. So after reaching the first stage, a disciple still practices vipassana meditation. And that is as a result of that vipassana meditation, he can reach the second stage of enlightenment. And that second stage is called one's returning. So returning to this human world only once. If a once returner is called in Pali Sakadagami. Sakadagami is made up of, let us say, Sakad and Agami. So Sakad means one and Agami means coming. So one's coming and one's coming back. So this disciple, after reaching the second stage of enlightenment, will come back to this human world once. So since he has to come back here once, that means after reaching the second stage as a human being, he will be reborn in the realm of celestial beings. And then from that celestial being, he will die from that celestial being and reborn in the human world. So in this way, he is called one returner. He comes back to this only one time. So if Sakadagami has actually two more rebirths, not one more, two more rebirths. One as a celestial being and the next as a human being. And after returning to the human world once, and in that human life, he will reach the other higher stages of enlightenment, and he will make the end of suffering. Now, what mental defilements does a Sakadagami abandon? Now you know that a Sotapanna abandons or eradicates three fetters. Eradicate means destroy them altogether. A Sakadagami is not like Sotapanna. He does not eradicate any more particular mental defilement. But he made the remaining mental defilements weaker or thinner. So that is what he achieved. So a Sakadagami is one who makes thinner the sensual lust or sensual desire and ill will or dosa. So a Sakadagami still has the sensual desire and dosa, anger or ill will or hate. But it is said that these two, or maybe the other mental defilements as well, they arise in the mind of a Sakadagami very infrequently. They arise only once in a while. And when they arise like scattered. They are not close, they are not strong. They are thin, like a thin layer of clouds or a wing of a fly. These are given in the commentaries. So although they arise in the mind of a Sakadagami, the kilesas, I mean mental defilement, they arise only once in a while, not frequently as they do in the minds of Sotapannas and in the minds of Putujanas and maybe also of Sotapannas. And When they arise weak. They are not strong, they are not gross. So, although we may say they still have mental defilements, their mental defilements are very thin, and they have mental defilements only once in a while, and so their minds are very pure. There was a man in my hometown, Mandalay. He was an ex-monk, and he thought he was a Sakadagami. And so he told this to his friends, who are also ex-monks, and very learned ex-monks. So his friend said, "No, you cannot be a Sakadagami, because you still lead a household life, you still have families." Then he said, "Sakadagami still has sensual desire and ill will, and so it is allowable that he was a Sakadagami." Then his friends pointed out to some passages in the commentaries. So, according to some commentaries, it is said that this much gross desire will not arise in the mind of a Sakadagami. So according to them, a Sakadagami may not lead a household life or married life. Now there are two opinions shown in the commentaries. One is held by some teachers, and the other held by majority of teachers. So some teachers held that since a Sakadagami has a family and still is leading a household life, he must have the sensual desires also. So that is the opinion of some teachers. But the majority of teachers said, no, the mental defilements that arise in the mind of a Sakadagami are so thin that there cannot be the sensual desire in the mind of a Sakadagami. And they said, what about having families and having sons and daughters? Then they would say, the conception can take place just by touching and so on. You know that in the commentaries there are given different causes of conception, and so it is said that just by touching conception can take place, just by hearing the noise, I mean sound, conception can take place, and so on. So they pointed out to that, and so they have they said a Sakadagami cannot have that gross sensual desire in his mind. So at this place, Mahasiswara did not give any decisions on this. He said, since it would be difficult for scientists nowadays to accept that conception can take place just by touching or hearing, the opinion of some teachers should also be should also be considered, not to refute it altogether. So he did not give any definite decision here, But you should consider also the opinion of the Samkhya's cannot be refuted totally, since in touching or hearing, the opinion of some teachers should also be should also be considered, not to refute it altogether. So he did not give any definite decision here, but you should consider also the opinion of the some teachers cannot be refuted totally, since it may be difficult to believe that conception can take place just by touch or hearing and so on. Do enlightened persons know what mental defilements they have eradicated and what mental defilements remain to be eradicated? Do they know or do they not? Now, after the attainment of Magga, there follow some thought processes by which a person reflects upon his attainment. So these almost always follow the attainment of enlightenment itself. So they reflect upon upon Magga, they reflect upon fruition phala, they reflect upon Nibbana, they reflect upon mental defilements that have been eradicated, and they reflect upon mental defilements that are yet to be eradicated. So these five things, they reflect on. But it is not a fixed rule that all these five kinds of reflection must take place with everybody. It is said in the books that the first three, they will definitely reflect on. That is, path, fruition, and nirvana. But the other two, the defilements eradicated and defilements remaining, they may or may not reflect on. If they do not reflect on these two, even they don't know what mental defilements they have eradicated and what are remaining. Now, during the time of the Buddha, the Buddha's cousin, Mahanama, he was a Sakadagami. But he found that mental defilements still arise in his mind, because he thought that he had eradicated all these. So when they arise and he was aware of them, he told it to the Buddha. They still arise in his mind. And so Buddha told him that because he did not reflect upon the mental defilement eradicated and the remaining, that he did not know about them. So even an enlightened person may not know what mental defilements he has eradicated and what mental defilements are remaining with him. Only when he makes the two kinds of reflection will he know about these mental defilements. And also in the commentaries it is explained that if a person does not know beforehand that such mental defilements are eradicated by such path and so on, he will not be able to tell, he will not know what what mental defilements he has eradicated and what mental defilements remaining. So he doesn't need to have some knowledge of the books to understand them. What should the disciple do? And the question is, what are the things that a once vidana should carefully attend to? And the answer is again the same. A bhikkhu who is a once vidana should carefully attend to these five aggregates subject to clinging as impermanent and so on. That means he practices vipassana again. He observes the five aggregates of clinging. When a bhikkhu who is a once vidana carefully attends thus to these five aggregates of clinging, it is possible that he may realize the fruit of non-returning. So after he becomes a Sakadagami, if he practices vipassana meditation, there is a possibility that he will reach the next higher stage of enlightenment, that is the stage of non-returning. So that is the third stage of enlightenment. The once returner means one who returns to this world of sense sphere only once. So, in case of the once returner, return means return to this human world. But here, non-returner means not returning to this human world and celestial world. So a person who has become a non-returner will not be reborn as a human being and not as a celestial being. He will be reborn as a Brahma. So he will be reborn in the pure abodes. There are five realms of pure abodes, and he will be reborn in these pure abodes one by one, and at the highest realm of the pure abodes he will attain final liberation. He will become an arahant and attain final liberation. So a non-returner is one who does not come back to this human realm as well as to the realm of celestial beings. So he will have one rebirth as Brahma. But he may have five rebirths, because there are five realms in the pure abodes. A non-returner is called in Pali anagami. So anagami is made up of na and agami. So na means not, and agami means coming. So not coming, that means not coming back. And anagami eradicates some more mental defilements. He eradicates this sensual desire and ill will or dosa altogether. So after becoming an anagami, a disciple will not be attached to any sense objects. He will not be able to go on leading a married life. And he will become incapable of dosa, incapable of getting angry. And along with dosa, he eradicates the fear, not because fear is said to be a kind of dosa. So he will not be afraid of anything at all, and he will not get angry even when there is provocation. He will not be attached to anything in the human world and in the world of celestial beings. So he is the one who is able to get rid of sensual desire and ill will. Now, there are two stories to illustrate anagami's abandoning or eradicating the sensual desire. Now, there was a man called Ugga, and he became an anagami. So after he became an anagami, he called his wife. It is said that he had four wives. So he called them and then told them, "Sisters, now I am keeping the five precepts with abstinence from sex as the fifth." So that means he took five precepts, but instead of the usual third, he put in the one that you used in the eight precepts. So that is called noble conduct as the fifth. So since he had become an anagami, he naturally took that precept. And so he said, "I am now keeping the five precepts with this abstinence from sex as the fifth." And so now, you may go on living here, or you may take whatever you want and go back to your parents' house, or just tell me if you want to get another man, so I will give you to him." So the eldest wife said, "Okay, please give me to a certain man." So he took his wife in his left hand and took the water bowl on the right hand, and then he gave his wife to that man, and he said, it is wonderful that he did not feel any regret, any envy or any ill will when he gave his wife away. So since he had become an anagami, he had no interest in sensual things. He had no interest even in inanimate objects of sense. So he was able to give up his wife very easily, and he said, "This is one wonderful thing in me." So the second story is a little long, so I'll have to make it short. So during the time of the Buddha, in the city of Rajagaha, there was a rich man called Visakha. Now please note that his name was Visakha, almost the same as the name of the female devotee, Visakha. So if it is a woman, we say Visakha with the long R. If it is a man, we say Visakha with the short R. So his name was Visakha, and he had a wife. Now Buddha visited the city of Rajagaha after he delivered the first sermon at Isipatana, and then spending the wasa there, and then he went on his journey, and ultimately he reached Rajagaha, and Buddha spent the second wasa at Rajagaha. So after reaching the city, Buddha talked to many people, including King Bimbisara. So Bimbisara and his many followers became Sotapannas. So this man was among those who became Sotapanna at the first meeting with the Buddha. And then later he listened to the Dharma taught by the Buddha, and he became a Sakadagami. And at another time, he attended the talk, and he became an Anagami. So after he became an Anagami, and when he went back home, he was changed. So on other days, he would go back smiling and maybe calling to his wife and so on. But on that day, he came like a monk. He came back to the house like a monk. So his wife was looking from the window and saw this strange behavior. So she thought, what has happened to him? And does he want somebody outside? Or has somebody told a divisive talk to him? So when he came, the wife offered the hand like she did every day. But Visakha did not take the hand. He just, I call this, keep his hand to himself. And so the wife was disappointed. And then the wife thought, okay, I will know when we eat. So at eating time, he did not eat at the same table with his wife. He took his food and then went to another place and ate like a monk, like you do here, right? The wife saw this and said, okay, I will know in the evening. So at night, he didn't enter the bed chamber. He went to another place and slept on his small couch there. So it went on for 2 or 3 days. So the wife could not hold anymore, and so she asked what has happened to her and so on. Then he said, although it is not normal to declare one's own attainment, now he had to tell his wife, because if he did not tell the truth, she would die of heartbreak. So he said, I have attained this Dhamma, and I can no longer live a married life. So you have 400 million, and I have 400 million, and so now all these are yours. You do whatever you like with them, and if you want to go on living in this house, you can live in this house, and I will be like your, you will be like my mother or sister, and so on. So he said. Then the wife asked, and although she said, if you want to marry some other person, you are free to do so. So she said, ordinary men cannot say this. So the Dhamma he said he had attained must be very great. So he asked, is the Dhamma obtainable by men only? Then the husband said, no, it can be obtained by anybody, man or woman. Then he said, in that case, I want to ordain. So he was very happy. So he arranged for the ordination. He informed King Kosala and got some palanquins and others. And then with pomp and ceremony, he took his wife to the nunnery where bhikkhunis live. And then he asked the chief bhikkhuni there to ordain his wife. Then the bhikkhuni said, dear man, you should tolerate an offense or two. Because they thought that she was angry, that the man was angry with his wife, and so now he was sending his wife to the nunnery. So they said, oh, a little offense should be tolerated. Don't do like this. And he said, no. And she wants to become a nun by herself through faith. So she was ordained. After her ordination, many people come to the nunnery, and so she did not get much time to practice. So she went to another place, taking her teachers with her, and then practiced meditation there. Since she was a gifted person, she had accumulated paramis in her past life, took her only 2 or 3 days to become an arahant. So she came, she went back to the city. When the husband heard that she had come back, he thought, oh, she ordained, and then after a few days she left, and now she came back. Maybe she wants to come back to lay less. So he went to her and asked questions on the Dhamma. And their conversation is recorded in one discourse in the Majjhima Nikaya. Actually, I have talked about that discourse in one of my talks, not here, I mean, and not many. Very deep questions, and her name was Dhammadina. So Dhammadina gave answers to him, and he was very pleased. So he went to the Buddha and reported about this, and the Buddha said, even if you ask this question to me, I will give the same answers that Dhammadina gave to you. So she was very, very honored by the Buddha. So here, when the Visakha became an anagami, he knew that he could not carry on living as a husband or living a household life, and so he could easily give up his wife and his wealth, his property, everything, because they are all objects of senses, and an anagami is not interested in any of these objects. So if you become an anagami, you will not care for anything in the world at all, including your spouses. So Mahasi Sero added here that since an anagami has eradicated desire for sense objects, if you think you are an anagami, you should not be smoking or fond of chewing betel. Sero must have seen somebody who claimed to be an anagami and who still smoke or chew betel. So he added this in his talk. Okay, now a little more about anagami tomorrow and about the arahants, and probably about the life after death. Okay.